Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's February 28th, 2020 program, Retaining the Eugene Workforce, Why It's Important and What Steps We Can Take. This is the 22nd program of our 2019-2020 programming year. My name is Eric Richardson, and I am City Club President until May of this year when we welcome our incoming President, Scott Coltrane. I'd like to acknowledge our diamond sponsors who, along with our business sponsors, support the City Club on a weekly, monthly, and annual basis. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable health care services and to improve the health of our members and communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. The University of Oregon. Since 1876, the university has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health. Peace Health is our community partner in Lane County and beyond. As our hometown health care provider for more than 80 years, their mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. And Lane Community College, who transforms lives through learning. It provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, please visit lanecc.edu/programs. And we'd also like to thank our institutional partners, the City of Eugene and Lane County governments. Without any further ado, I'd like to go into our program by introducing our own Chamber of Commerce director. Please welcome Brittany Quick Warner to the podium.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for being here, for joining us to chat about this incredibly important topic of workforce retention. At the Chamber of Commerce, I am the president and CEO. I've been in this role a little over 2.5 years formally. I've been with the Chamber almost 7, and I have had the distinct honor and pleasure of working with hundreds, thousands actually, of local businesses on issues that they're facing every single day. The Chamber has 3 main areas of focus, economic development, business advocacy, and member services. So in each of those areas, we are working every single day with local companies to really try and address what is it that's keeping them up at night? And that's a question that I very pointedly ask when I sit down with local members and have had the chance every year to talk to hundreds of members and ask that question. And the number one thing I get when I ask that question is workforce. As you all know, our economy has been strong for the last several years, and we are in an economy with a really low unemployment rate, and that is a blessing, and it's also a curse when it comes to talent retention, talent recruitment, making sure that that we have the skilled workforce that we need. The Chamber's mission is for economic prosperity and building an inclusive local economy that really helps all people prosper. And we do that by, like I said, really empowering and advocating for local businesses to be able to grow and to thrive, to pay living wage jobs, to make sure they can support and take care of their employees, and to make sure they can support and take care of our community. So today we're going to have a really interesting conversation. When I talk about workforce with folks, there's the issues run the gamut, right? So it's about recruitment, it's about retention, it's about wages and benefits. It's about finding skilled workforce. How do we make sure that we have the folks in town that have the right skills for the jobs that we have here? How do we make sure that we're aligning the skills that our colleges and universities are training to make sure they match the industries that we have in our community? So each of those topics, I think, could warrant its own full City Club discussion. So today we're going to try and focus on business retention specifically. How are companies working to retain the employees that they have? And how are we as a region working to retain talent here? So we're going to look at the macro level and then look at the micro level at individual businesses as well. So I'm going to be joined by 4 people who are far more expert on this issue than I am. And they're going to be able to talk a little bit about, from each of their perspectives, how these issues are addressed in our community. The first is Henry Fields. He is the workforce analyst serving Lane County for the Oregon Employment Department. He provides economic data and labor market information to improve business decisions across the county. Mr. Fields is a graduate of the University of Oregon, and he holds a degree in public administration from the University of Indiana. Celeste Marshall is the director of people and operations at IDX Broker, one of the fastest growing real estate technology providers in the country that's headquartered here in Eugene, Oregon. Ms. Marshall works closely with IDX leadership team to identify, develop, and implement strategic organizational initiatives that are designed to increase employee engagement and performance. Michelle Howard is with Performance Resources, where she is a part of the talent management team. In that role, she focuses on helping organizations become more profitable by making better people decisions. Michelle is a member of the Society for Human Resources Management and a Lane County Human Resources Board member. And lastly, we have Michelle Swift. Michelle is a faculty member at the at Oregon State University College of Business, where she's an assistant school head and teaches graduate and undergraduate courses in HR management. She received her PhD from the University of Colorado at Boulder and her master's in human resources and industrial relations from the University of Oregon. Prior to academia, Dr. Swift spent over 10 years in human resources. So if you'll please join me in welcoming these four up here, we're gonna have each of them, are gonna have a little bit of time to chat about their area specifically, and then we'll open it up for questions. So first we'll have Henry come chat.
Thank you so much, Brittany. So I'm gonna kick us off by talking a little bit about why retention matters. Some of this has been mentioned already, but specifically, I think it's obvious that retaining employees is vital to individual businesses' bottom line. That's something that we intuitively understand. There's gonna be a lot more discussion about that. I kinda wanna share some broader economic concerns that result from lack of worker retention or improving worker retention. Worker retention is critical in a period of low unemployment and workforce change that we find ourselves in right now. There are a lot of difficulties recruiting workers right now. If you're in charge of hiring, you know that. And the easiest workers to recruit are the ones that you don't lose in the first place. So a couple reasons why that's true. First of all, we have, as has been mentioned, a consistently decreasing unemployment rate. In July 2009, there are more than 6 unemployed workers for each job vacancy that was open in the U.S. After 10 years of economic growth in July of 2019, that number was less than 1. So it's a very different hiring environment that businesses need to be aware of. Our workforce locally, as well as nationally, is also aging, which means that puts additional pressure on businesses to replace our skilled workers. As an example of this, 25% of Lane County's workforce is right now 55 years and older. That number was 10% in 1991. So a quarter of our workforce is within 10 years of traditional retirement age, and obviously that means that businesses, again, are in a different context than they used to be. Also, having a mixture of skills and workers is an important economic differentiator for our area. Aggregations of skilled workers create new innovations and create products that can't be produced other places, which is really the basis for our comparative advantage. If skilled people always have to take their ideas elsewhere, that means less money and ideas that can circulate locally to help improve our local economy. To dive deeper into this issue, there really are two levels that we're talking about here, the macro and the micro level. The macro being how our local economy does at retaining workers, and the micro being how individual businesses are making decisions about this. I would say the macro sets the stage for the micro in that no individual company is going to be able to change the economic trends in our area on their own, but that's not to say that individual businesses have no control over their destiny. And also, micro decisions in an industry can add up to macro level effects. Let's look at the macro level first. At the top level, we're lucky here in Lane County, like Oregon overall, to draw workers from all over the country. We're a net importer of workers from most places across the United States. This brings new people into our workforce with a variety of skills and backgrounds and sets us up at the beginning for better success than areas that aren't doing that. Eugene Metro is a bit of a mixed bag when it comes to some types of worker retention, however. So for example, despite a major research university here, we don't have a substantially higher percentage of young people with a bachelor's degree or more than the nation as a whole. What that means is that could be an economic concern. It does tend to reflect the fact that young college graduates have better economic opportunities in certain fields in larger cities. And so that's obviously something that we need to be conscious of and preparing ourselves to deal with. Our turnover rates overall are not bad. In general, areas with high turnover are more associated with particular industries than they are local factors. So retail, agriculture, temporary assistance firms, these are the type of industries that tend to have very high turnover. Things like manufacturing, finance, public administration, and utilities tend to have low turnover, and we have a pretty good mix across the board of that, so we end up being pretty average. Metro areas in Oregon do better than rural areas, generally speaking, when it comes to turnover, but again, that has a lot to do with the types of industries that are more present in rural areas. Let's really briefly turn our attention to the micro level. I think everybody else on the panel is going to have some very interesting things to say about this, but I just wanted to provide some broader context that that businesses need to be aware of when they're making individual decisions. Generally, I think there are three big categories that we might think of when we're talking about how businesses retain workers, including things like pay and benefits, opportunities to grow and advance within your workplace, and then workplace culture, broadly speaking, and workplace culture and supports. Some context that businesses should be aware of when they're making decisions. When it comes to wages, our local wages have historically been a little bit lower than Oregon as a whole, and those wages in turn have been lower than the nation as a whole. There are a lot of reasons for this that I could spend all the rest of our afternoon discussing, but basically I think that's something that industries should be aware of. One reason is that's just the context we find ourselves in, and second, if you are a business that is able to pay higher wages, that tends to attract a little bit more attention in this type of area. It's not true that every job pays less locally. There are some that pay more, but it really does depend on the job and the industry. When it comes to opportunities for advancement, this is a really interesting thing that I think people need to be aware of. I helped tabulate some survey data from the Eugene Young Professionals Summit, which was a really great way to learn about what young workers in our area have as their concerns. And one of the questions on the survey was, if you've ever considered leaving the area, why? The top answer by a long shot was opportunities for job advancement and job opportunities overall. About 43% of responses mentioned something to do with this. More than pay, more than nightlife opportunities, other things that people bring up a lot. I think that's a really interesting thing. 43% of workers that attended the summit indicated this as a potential force pulling them away. So it's something that businesses need to be aware of, how to provide opportunities for their workers to advance and grow within their roles. And then, just to close with one final thought, although we are here to talk about retaining our workers, I would say that this is not to suggest that we need to be overly possessive of our workers. Individual companies can benefit from letting their employees grow in roles outside their organization. And also, while we want people who graduate here to have local opportunities, no matter their life goals or education goals, we do benefit from letting young people, for example, go explore and develop their human capital, as economists would say, elsewhere. So I really think striking a balance between those is important. But yeah, I look forward to hearing questions and what the rest of the panel has to say. So thank you.
Thank you, Henry. We're going to have Celeste Marshall come up and chat with us. One thing I thought, you know, that you brought up at the very end here that was really interesting to me was this idea of, obviously, retention is important, but letting folks kind of go out, grow human capital, but then how do we get them back, right? There's this concept of boomerang employees that are grown, fostered, kind of developed in our community. They leave to go for another opportunity. How do we get those folks back? And I think that Eugene is uniquely positioned to sort of be a really great place for young adults who are starting their families, who are wanting to grow and kind of plant their roots somewhere, to be a place that is attractive to those folks. So I think that's another really interesting area of the talent conversation is how do we say, yes, go out, fly, you know, spread your wings, but come on back whenever you're ready. So we'll talk a little bit more with Celeste.
Thank you for the introduction, Brittany. So again, my name is Celeste, and I'm with IDX. IDX is a mid-sized software company right here in the heart of downtown Eugene. I'm here to talk to you about the notion that if you keep your employees happy, they'll stick around, and more importantly, they'll keep your customers happy. It's a simple concept, but it's one that can be quite difficult to achieve. You know, we've always struggled with that. It's a concept that we believe in and one that we strive for on a daily basis. We appreciate our employees, and we're proud of creating a workplace that enriches their lives. We know that their happiness translates into great customer experiences and happy customers overall. In this increasingly competitive business world, top talent is incredibly in high demand. If we aren't making our top workers happy, somebody else is going to pick them up. And no two employees are alike, of course, unfortunately. Each has their own unique desires and goals. And we know through conducting our own annual anonymous surveys internally that our employees, unsurprisingly, want to be appreciated by their employers. They want to be treated fairly. They want to be challenged and excited by their work. And they want to be paid at or above market rates with great benefits. So, where do you start? At IDX, we've decided to start by continuously cultivating a culture that matches the type of employee that we want to employ. So that means making sure that our employees feel a strong bond with the company overall. At IDX, we happen to have a pretty casual, laid-back atmosphere with core values centered around growth, passion, and customer centricism. So we found that our most successful employees tend to be those that are curious, adaptable, and motivated. So our hiring process is deliberately choosy to emphasize those skills among other job-specific experience. This ensures that we hire employees that we believe will contribute positively to our culture overall. Our new hires are set up for success from the very start. So our onboarding process sets out to teach new employees not only about the job, but also about benefit package offerings, company culture, how they can contribute, how they can thrive in their new role. We know that training and support that we provide from day one can set the tone for the employee's overall tenure at IDX. We also consider open communication an essential practice to maintaining employee retention. Our leadership team is tasked with cultivating open lines of communication to ensure that their team feels they can discuss new ideas, pose questions, and express concerns. Our top performers also expect us to give them feedback and to be honest and open with them about improvements that they can make to their performance. But that willingness to give and receive feedback is based on regular connection happening with each staff member on a regular basis. Because we strive to never let potential performance issues build up pending the dreaded annual performance review. We know through experience that the less clear the role is, the less an employee understands their impact with the company, the more likely they are to feel disgruntled and begin searching for a new job. Additionally, we wholeheartedly believe in providing an authentic, healthy work-life balance as an essential to job satisfaction. Our people have full lives outside of work, so we encourage them to take their vacation time. And if late nights are necessary to wrap up a project or help a client, flex their schedule to avoid working overtime unless absolutely necessary. We also offer some creative and unique perks beyond our stellar health insurance package and the competitive salaries because we want our people to feel proud of where they work and to boost employee morale. We provide our employees with catered lunches, free healthy snacks and coffee all day, gym reimbursements, free downtown parking, access to training resources and conferences, retirement matching, and generous amounts of paid time off, including paid parental leave. So, to stay ahead of the game, we have to revisit our employee retention practices regularly and to stay current on our market for salary, benefits, and best practices in developing high performers. We're talking about this regularly because maintaining a healthy workplace culture and strong manager-employee relations should be an ongoing focus for us indefinitely. In this candidate's market, hiring and keeping high performers requires us to work harder and smarter than the companies we're competing with for talent. The last thing we want to deal with is costly employee turnover, but the truth is employees might leave, and they might leave to take on a new exciting opportunity through no fault of their current employer. So in those cases, we cheer them on and encourage them to go be from IDX in the community. Thank you for allowing me to speak about our experience.
Thank you, Celeste. The Chamber of Commerce, obviously we're here representing local businesses, but we are a local business ourselves. We have about 13 staff, and when I stepped into this role, this idea of employee retention was in my face. As a small nonprofit where I know a lot of, you know, the folks here or some of our listeners, we aren't in some of these large for-profit companies that maybe have the extra to do a lot of these perks. So it's super interesting to me, and we'll talk a little bit more in the question and answer about how all different sizes and types of businesses can address some of those retention strategies in a way that kind of fits to their budget. We have very much adopted this go be from the Chamber of Commerce attitude, because what I want is for our employees to be trained really well, to really love this community, and then to be amazing employees for the folks that they're going to work for, one of which was stolen by IDX Broker. So I joke about it, but in all seriousness, we are in an economy where we share workers a lot, and so I think it's on each of our employers to make sure that we're training and supporting those employees the best way possible as they transition through different employers. So we're going to hear now from Michelle with Which Michelle is first? There's two of you here. Michelle Howard. All right, thanks.
Thank you, Brittany. I'm Michelle Howard with Performance Resources. And as the panelists have already talked about, just being a great place to work, if you can just, you know, absorb that and work to strive to be a great place to work, that's the first step, right? After that, I'm going to drill down, kind of talk about a little bit of a checklist that you might be able to work from in the micro area. I would suggest you want to start earlier in the process than you think you need to. So do as much as you can on that front end to invest in the front end of the process. It's always cheaper to invest on that front end than to try to patch on the back end and scramble to try to fix mistakes. And to that end, kind of a theme with what I talk about is technology, technology. It's your friend. So wherever you can go digital, do that. Don't be afraid of that, because there's a lot of fabulous stuff out there to help us with technology. But drilling down even further, start at the very beginning with simply reviewing your job ads. Make sure they accurately represent the position. I don't know about you, but I had been hired in a lot of different positions where I have a thought in my mind, an expectation about what a job is, and then I get there, I get hired, and it is a completely different job. So if you can start with being very clear about what that position is, it's gonna really help you. Consider working with someone who is versed in SEO and algorithms that the job boards use. That's really important nowadays. And consider using videos. One of the things you can do is show a day in the life of. So many people are doing day in the life of positions that are high turnover or just difficult positions to fill or might be nuanced, so they might be, you know, different than the applicants and new hires would expect. And you can do those on your company website. You sometimes do them on your jobs landing pages. There's many different ways to do that. And if that's not available to you, you could always also have the applicants or new hires watch the video in training or the onboarding process. And that can bridge that gap between the expectation they have of the job and what the job really is. Use as many tools as you can. Anything you can do to hire the right person for the right job from the very beginning is going to be extremely helpful. So combinations of assessments and surveys, whether it's background checks, drug screenings, job questions up front, to learn as much as you can about that applicant. Reference checking, whether it's the digital kind, the new digital, or the old-fashioned picking up the phone and checking for those references. Also, here's that technology part, add texting. Text capability is amazing, and people are really liking it. A trend we're seeing right now is applicants are reading texts within about 3 minutes with a 98% open rate. That's lightning fast compared to what we're used to, right? Emails take about 8 to 24 hours, and they have a 20% open rate. So if you can speed up that onboarding or communication or hiring process, you're going to capture those best applicants. Then review your whole onboarding process. Make sure it's a good experience for those new hires. That's kind of the representation of your company, leading them into the expectation of what their career is going to be like with your organization. And then overall, measure and capture data. So capture as much data as you can. I suggest doing that with technology. It makes it much easier, and it makes you more accurate and efficient. So then you're going to capture the data, you're going to measure, you're going to assess, you're gonna make adjustments and tweaks, and then you're gonna rinse and repeat and start over again. And if you're a numbers person, you could calculate your cost to hire, good number to have, and your return on investment for your whole hiring process. That way, if you need to make a case whether to keep a certain tool or not, or to add an additional tool, you have all that information ready to make your case. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Now we're going to hear from Michelle Swift. Dr. Swift is a faculty at Oregon State University.
Thank you, Brittany. So I'm going to kind of pull it back a little bit and talk from a broader perspective, because Celeste and what she's talking about, what IDX is doing, definitely embodies best practice. When we talk about turnover and retention, as Henry pointed out, a little bit of turnover is actually a really good thing. I mean, not that we want to lose everybody, but sometimes it means that they have an opportunity to go develop themselves and come back, provided they want, we create a reason for them to come back. It also means we have an opportunity to bring somebody new in and bring in their ideas. So a little bit is healthy. The other thing though, but when we want to manage turnover and we want to manage our retention, we also want to go beyond that and create engaged employees. So some people choose to stay in an organization, other people have to stay. And what we really want is to leverage the choose to stays that are in there. And the way that we can do that, according to the research, is there are some key levers in there. The biggest predictors of turnover and retention and engagement are actually how people feel about what they do, who they work with, and where they do it. And by where they do it, there's two levels. It's the organization, but also, as Celeste and Henry and Brittany have alluded to, it's always also the community. I mean, once they leave the community, it can become that much harder to bring them back. So we want to go after those feelings. And the way that we do that is we look at some drivers. And the drivers that we look at, a lot of it has to do with our hiring practices and finding the right people. Onboarding. Onboarding starts the moment you talk with them, before they're even an employee. It's how do they feel? It's pulling them into that process. But it's a joint process between leadership, managers, and HR. Oftentimes we think about it as an HR thing to do, and it's all about our hiring and our onboarding and our performance management. And it's so much more than that. We can have all the best systems in the world, but if we don't have leadership that's engaging with those high performers, if we don't have managers that are talking to their employees and helping to develop their career plans, figuring out how to leverage their strengths and apply their strengths, we're not going to create the feelings that we want them to have that turn around and keep them around. So, thank you.
All right, now I'm going to invite all four of you up here. Grab a seat at the front, and we're going to, I have a couple of questions pre-populated here, and then we'll take a break and take questions from the audience. All right, so I'm going to kind of toss this out there, and we'll see how this works, but I'm going to let whoever feels so inclined to answer, we'll let you jump on the mic first, and then not everybody has to touch on each one, but we'll kind of pass the mic around. So why don't we talk a little bit about employee engagement? How is employee engagement different? Why does it matter, differ from just retention? Michelle Swift, did you have a, yeah?
Okay. Retention, like I mentioned earlier, is about people staying. And engagement is more of those feelings. It's highly related to a well-known concept of job satisfaction. It also is highly related to organizational commitment. How committed are employees to the organization to the organization they work for. But engagement captures those feelings, those intrinsic feelings about how someone feels around what they do. And when we can engage our employees and when we can create those positive feelings around where they are and what they do and who they work with, they're going to choose to stay. Doesn't mean that they might not have that kind of that sudden opportunity that they can't pass up. They might. We actually had that happen to us up at the university, the college that I'm at. Somebody, he wasn't looking, but he got approached. And after talking, he was like, okay, wait a minute, this would be sort of crazy for me not to pursue it. And my most memorable experience, you know, was when I was working in consulting and decided to move into academia. It was my boss, the vice president, who wrote one of my letters of recommendation for me to be able to quit my job. So those are things that make employers, even for those that leave, it turns those employees into brand ambassadors, and they can still be engaged with us even when they're gone because they still feel that positive way about us. So that's where I would differentiate engagement from retention.
Great, thank you. Celeste, you kind of brought up the idea of and discussed some of the perks that are available at for employees at IDX Broker. But talk about, you know, how can employers who maybe don't have as robust resources to, or have already decided to focus those robust resources in that way, how can they help provide financially resourceful benefits?
It's a great question. So starting for us, often we start with being able to provide the things that we can do today. That means intrinsic things like providing a great workplace, but also providing a flexible work schedule, providing additional training opportunities within the workplace. So not necessarily sending employees out for paid trainings, but internally, if there's an opportunity amongst another team or an expert within a specific subject. I also noted a couple things that, again, you know, there's a little bit of money involved, but remote work opportunities, if you have somebody who isn't client-facing, providing them the flexibility, realistically, for them to be able to work from home one day a week to start out. You know, if there's an opportunity for them to be able to address some things at home while also working, that is always a huge plus for our employees. Employee discounts, if you have a store or some sort of service that you're providing, that's typically a huge plus. Paid volunteer time, so time off to go volunteer at an organization that they're excited about. Maybe some wellness benefits, that's another easy one, not very easy in quotes. I know if you work with your insurance broker that often they have some unique and exciting ideas. We pay employees or reimburse employees $30 a month, which realistically is a relatively small number, but they're able to use those dollars for running shoes or a race entry fee or smoking cessation or some sort of other wellness related activity that they are interested in. They submit the receipt and it feels like a big bonus to them because we are interested and involved in their overall wellness. Yeah.
Good, thank you. Henry and maybe Celeste can tag team this one too. So since we're on the lines of benefits that maybe are more cost effective, the chamber, you know, acknowledged a handful of years ago when we were really diving into this workforce issue, some of the things that really help keep people here in this community and keep people at a company. Obviously the job opportunities, the benefits, those things are important, but there's actually a lot of research out there that shows YPs or young professionals' ability to engage in their local community and the relationships that they build in a community are often stronger factors when they're deciding whether to leave or stay. And I think sometimes that is just as internal for a company as well. So Henry, can you talk a little bit about that piece of it? And then Celeste, I know IDX has been involved in some of those initiatives as well.
Yeah, so in that same survey that I cited, another major factor really was considering living somewhere else because it's difficult to break into a social circle here. It's difficult to feel that you're engaged in the community. So that's a great example of a benefit that may not even directly cost you any money, but providing a culture that allows a business to really think about how their employees can be part of this community, that really is effectively a workplace support. So that's something that I would encourage a lot of businesses to think about.
And I will say, just from our own experience, because the Chamber does such a good job of producing these events, when we set out to hire incredibly cool top performers in town, they're often young professionals. We do have a lower median age at IDX because we're providing a software solution that basically attracts that age group, if you will. Because the Chamber provides these amazing events, we had employees coming to us and saying, hey, can we be involved? Can we volunteer? Hey, can we be on the actual planning committee? And we set out to basically encourage them because it looked like it was something that was exciting to them. What we found in return is that we have these employees that are more connected to the community, and in turn, they're more connected to IDX because they're happier, they have friends, they have civic engagement, which means they care about the issues that are hitting Eugene. They also care about providing solutions and being a part of the solution moving forward. So it has absolutely provided them additional skills, additional experience, and made them more effective in their regular jobs as well.
Thanks. Michelle, how can businesses find out if their pay and benefits are competitive? So if we're talking about the dollar and cents, and we know that that is really important to employees, how do folks figure that information out? And Henry, I'll let you chime into that as well.
So there's a few different resources. Onetonline.org That is a free resource. It is sponsored by the Department of Labor, and it's really development focused. But don't get overwhelmed, because there's a lot of information in there. So just, you know, focus in. There's a search bar. You just can search by job or region. You can find pay benefits for every job. There's jobs you have never heard of in there. So that one also links through to CareerOneStop.org, also sponsored by Department of Labor. And it's a little bit more applicant focused. It has a little bit of veteran focus as well, but those two, and there's job boards also on there, but those are very helpful. And then salary.com, they have a free version, and they also have paid annual subscriptions. They are really cutting edge. They are updated monthly. So if you're in a fast-paced industry, that one might be super helpful, just because they are updated so quickly. Department of Labor lags a little bit in their indicators, so salary.com might be a little bit better. There's also payscale.com if you are interested in a paid subscription.
Great.
All those are great. I also want to, speaking of information overload, if you wanted to really be overloaded by information, there actually is an Oregon-specific site that builds on a lot of these things on ONET, and it's the website that the Oregon Employment Department puts out, qualityinfo.org. So what you're going to find there is 800 occupations and their wage rates, not only for Oregon, but also a lot of the counties, a lot of the regions of Oregon. And what I would say about that is, if you don't know if your operations manager, for example, is paid at a competitive wage, you should probably find out before they are, because they will find it out. This information is easier to access than ever before, as Michelle has alluded to. So that's also one of my major roles, so just so folks know. So you can also feel free to reach out to me, and I can help you, along with the resources that Michelle has laid out, figure out if you're paying a competitive wage and benefits that are similar to other industries in our area. So. Yes, the website is qualityinfo.org, and that is an Oregon-specific website that provides data on our area.
Henry, since you have the mic here, you know, we talked a little bit about young professional engagement, but let's talk about some of the other changes in our workforce that we should mm-hmm. be prepared for. So you talked about aging employees, mm-hmm. folks, you know, a larger portion than ever before of folks getting to retirement age.
Yes.
What are some of those changes, and how are they impacting us?
Yeah, a couple things that I think businesses need to be thinking ahead about. One, like is mentioned, we have an older workforce. That means we have, for example, four times as many workers that are 65 and older than we did 20 years ago. So that's a really interesting thing to think about. We actually are retaining workers older, and that requires a workforce strategy that is a little bit different than it used to be. And the other aspect that I really encourage people to think about, we get a lot of information here that we don't have a very diverse workforce, which is true when you look in terms of race and ethnicity, true in terms of overall compared to the United States, but because of that fact, it's actually changing at a faster rate. So for example, if you look at the net change in workers from about 2000 to 2018, that is overwhelmingly, I'm talking greater than 90% of the net change of workers accounting for retirements been workers that are not non-Hispanic white. So that's a really interesting thing for our region, that businesses are going to have to adapt to quickly in terms of changing demographics of the workforce. That means thinking critically about how to create a diverse and inclusive workforce, thinking about how to bring in things like employee resource groups, which I imagine these folks can talk very specifically about, and supporting a workforce that looks a little different than it did 25 years ago.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. We're going to take a quick 5-minute break here, and I want to come back with some questions from the group. One thing that I want to, you know, for you all to kind of ponder and touch on is this idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion within the workforce, and how are we as employers, you know, evolving to make sure that our policies and procedures are more inclusive. That's a big focus for the chamber this year, and trying to help train up employers to do that better. So we'll let folks kind of contemplate their own questions, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Good evening. You're listening to City Club of Eugene on KLCC, Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. You can find all City Club of Eugene programs on our website, klcc.org.
Welcome back to the February 28th program, Retaining the Eugene Workforce. why it's important, and what steps we can take next. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize our gold sponsors, Emergency Veterinarian Hospital and Sacred Earth Botanicals. Now we'll go into our question and answer session with our first questioner, Bob. Go ahead, take the floor.
Thank you. Bob Cassidy, City Club member. Henry, when you mentioned all the businesses in the community that are hiring, you did not mention the education community, which is a very large part of our workforce. One of the problems that they have, since they're underpaid, we're now rating school-wise fourth from the bottom. We're ahead of Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee. The one major problem that they have is the cost of housing. What my question would really go to Brittany, what is the Chamber of Commerce's plan to increase the transportation from LTD or other ways to these satellite cities?
So assuming that folks, okay, I think I understand what you're saying. So folks who can't afford to live here, living in satellite cities, transportation, well, so, you know, we definitely are not the transportation experts, right? Lane Transit District plays that role, but we play an advocacy role on behalf of those businesses to make sure that we do have a good transportation system and we do have affordable housing. So we're approaching it in two different directions.
Does the Chamber of Commerce have a plan to foster this so that there can be better transportation from the satellite cities?
Absolutely. Yep, transportation is a big priority for us. I think that more important is that we address the affordable housing crisis in our community so we can you know, have an environment where folks can live here in this community and don't have to commute in and out. But we know that that's going to be inevitable. We could go into the housing thing long, but it isn't a priority for the Chamber and for lots of organizations in town.
Todd Boyle. I would like to ask all the corporate members here why you didn't mention the shortage of affordable housing as a significant factor in whether, in fact, I just want to ask you bluntly, do you encounter a shortage of affordable housing as a problem in either being able to hire people in Eugene or to retain employees? That's the question, because there's a huge discussion in the city about workforce housing. Thank you.
Yeah, I will say, too, that's absolutely true. I don't do any hiring, so there may be some different perspectives on that. There is this kind of deadly trap that we can come into if we have housing that's too expensive and wages that are low. I think you can look to the coast to see an example of what that looks like even the next step. They tend to have even lower wages and even higher housing costs in a lot of instances. And that's obviously a workforce issue. It's a workforce issue, honestly, all across the West Coast. And to say that is not to pass the buck and say that we have no responsibility for it. Instead, it's to say it really is a problem in a lot of places, and we have a great opportunity to be able to move on to that.
Michelle Howard, great topic, obviously. I've seen some people who are employers that are larger employers out in the rural areas get pretty creative with even offering transportation for some of their workers. So I think it's going to be pretty important for these employers, for all of us to get creative. But offering transportation as part of the employment is one idea I have seen.
From the Chamber's perspective, absolutely. Affordable housing, workforce housing, market rate housing, all of the above is absolutely critical. And we do hear employers who are complaining about the inability to, you know, they might be able to recruit someone to this community, but they can't find somewhere affordable for them to live. Even more important for lower wage workers who obviously are on, you know, fixed or low incomes, they're struggling as well. So it runs the gamut. I could go into more detail about some of the priorities we have there around fixing some of the regulatory burdens to actually get housing built affordably, the land use, you know, the land use codes that enable more dense housing but also allow for more housing to be built. There's all kinds of areas to be worked on and that are being worked on in the community for that, but it is an issue for employers, and that's why the Chamber has kind of gotten more involved in that issue, more so in the last 5 years than we ever had been, because it's gotten even worse, and that's one of the bigger concerns.
Ruth Daimler, and my question is about job retention. Do you also promote the idea? I was really pleased to hear about they really want happy employees. Do you make an effort to see that employees are having job evaluations. So they evaluate their job, and if there are problems, they can, without signing their names, they can evaluate and turn in evaluation. So I understand there are books on this now because they found such a necessity for it.
So speaking to sort of, there's multiple facets to job evaluation. I mean, there's evaluating the employee. There's also evaluating the employee's manager. There's responding and letting the organization know how employees feel about what the organization is or isn't doing. So there's multiple layers to evaluation. Deloitte & Touche, there's a recent article, there was an article a few years ago in Harvard Business Review that talked about what Deloitte & Touche has been doing with their job performance evaluation process. Basically, most managers don't like it. Most employees don't like it. They sort of reinvented it. They streamlined it into a couple of questions. And it was basically, is this a person you want to keep working here? Is this a place you want to keep working at? Mm-hmm. They figured those were some of the, really the fundamental questions. And then also asked some other questions and created a process where managers and employees had really regular ongoing conversations, as opposed to the once or twice a year dreaded performance discussion. So it's an interesting, it's a great article. So anybody who can get it from the Harvard Business Review that was put out a few years ago, it's nice. And I'm gonna kind of tap into Michelle Howard's conversation, is doing engagement surveys, asking employees how they feel about things and what they appreciate, why they doing stay interviews, finding out why they stay. Because even if you have a 6% turnover rate, it means you've got a 94% retention rate. There's a reason those 94% aren't leaving. Find out why and build on those things. So I think evaluations can be done on multiple levels with a wider range of audiences.
Michelle Howard, I would just add to that that there's great software out there to help you. See a trend here? Mm-hmm. Software. It just is so easy. There's great software where you can have people be anonymous. You can have a continuing conversation so people can get back to commenting at their own pace. So it's not a once a year at this dreaded thing. It can be as a career ongoing that they're doing. So managers can log in, hires can log in, the employees can log in, and it's really important. It makes you more efficient. And then if there are areas that are identified, whether that be developmental or otherwise, we like to focus on the positive, right, that you can also link to some modules for that, and you can track your progress, and again, managers can be notified when a module is complete or not. So software.
I'm Paul Thompson, a City Club member for on and off over since 2003. Thank you for coming today. This is a retention question. You really got my attention when a couple of you mentioned the term civic engagement. It seemed like it has a value to the employee of making them an individual that wants, that the company wants to retain. And on the other side, the city gets some benefit because of the wider view of the employee. I would really appreciate having you elaborate on that as to how employees can participate, for instance, in an organization like the City Club, where we need to have a younger demographic, and how can we mine that, both from the employer standpoint and the employee standpoint?
I can take it. I'm super passionate about this. So if you want me to take it, I'll take it. I think that there are so many opportunities for employers to create the workforce, the work environment that they want by encouraging civic engagement, for a lot of reasons, and some that are very beneficial to the employer. There's a lot of ROI there. One, overall happiness. Folks who are engaged in the community, even if it's around hard issues that sometimes are draining and weigh on people, they are generally more excited about the community that they're in because they feel like there is some way for them to make a difference. For an employer to have happy employees coming to work every day, that's a huge piece to help keep other people there too, right? Because people's happiness plays off each other. Other you know, benefits are just general knowledge and awareness of the community. Engaging in civic issues, you aren't just, you know, sitting in a conversation with someone about one specific thing. You're networking about a lot of different things. And so exposing people to different folks outside of their business is, for the most part, always going to improve a business's success rate in the community. On the engagement piece and how folks can get engaged, there's a, you know, a plethora of amazing organizations out there that are engaging folks at all ages and at all levels. And I think that a lot of times businesses get tapped by organizations, by nonprofits, by communities to be fiscal sponsors, to be engaged at a financial level. There's so much more that businesses can give to this community than just their financial resources. And by all means, our businesses are giving an incredibly generous amount to our organizations and to our community financially, but they also have time and skills and talents that can be used by organizations. And again, it goes back to that employee happiness level. If they feel like they're contributing outside of their job, they're going to be more fulfilled, and I think it's gonna help them stay where they're at. On the flip side, I've engaged with several young professionals specifically who have left their employer because they did not support them engaging in these things that they wanted to be engaging in. And it wasn't even, you know, taking a huge advantage of that. It was just saying, I would like to leave at 4:30 on a Monday to make it to a 5 o'clock committee meeting, and just being told, no, they can't do that. And it's little things like that that really do weigh in on folks whenever they want to get engaged in the community.
This is Michelle, I'm going to add to this. The younger generation, this is probably one of the most important values that they have, is actually being engaged, connecting to their community, feeling like there's something meaningful beyond going to work, yeah. 8 to 5. So it's a really important thing. The one thing I would encourage is, as employers decide, you know, like, what do they want to get involved in? What are they going to support? What things? Because they might not want their employees to be connected to 50 organizations, but there might be 20 different causes or 5 different causes. And this is sort of an example that sometimes gets some pushback from some of my students. Patagonia is an organization that really has done a good job with this. And they have the resources, and they've created policies around it that really sort of give their employees lots of opportunities to engage, to the point that if you Google and come up with some YouTube videos, you can see the fact that they will even pay for their employees to get out of jail if they get arrested at a social protest demonstration. You can't do something
illegal. I don't know if I
recommend
that.
They can't do anything illegal, but you know, there's some things around that. But one of the things that really sort of resonates for Patagonia is that they've connected to organizations that are consistent with their values, whether it's the environment, whether it's around equity and inequity, diversity and inclusion, but find those things that really enable the organization to demonstrate its authenticity and support the employees in getting engaged with doing those things to help.
We got 5 minutes, so we're going to be more concise.
So following up on Paul's proposal, send us your young people to help us make City Club a lively place, a livelier place. I'm Mary Layton. I've been a member since 2006. And I thought I heard one of you talk about leveraging the engagement of the people who choose to be with you. And you had sorted the employees out into people who choose to be there and people who have to be there. And this is a town full of giant organizations. One person gets an awesome job, in my case it was me, and the other person's stuck. What do you do to leverage the engagement of people who have to be there so that it feels less icky that they loyally followed their person, or, you know, or I just want to live near their grandma, and they're here. How do you get those people engaged? What do you do for them?
So this is Michelle Swift again. So I was the one who talked about have to stay versus choose to stay. It's really going to be, for those people, it's about creating meaningful opportunities for them to do interesting things where they work. I mean, it's not always going to be about being moved into the next role up. So they might be there because they've chosen to be near family or be for other reasons. But one of the latest things, and this is part of some of the onboarding innovations, is figuring out how to enable people to leverage their strengths, bring their strengths in, and display who they are and what they want to do. So there's lots of different techniques and different practices that are being experimented with and tested with around what's called job crafting, around reflected best self work, various things that some of the employers are trying to experiment with to help their employees bring who they are and be excited about where they are, whether they're choosing or having to stay there. Good.
Robin Fletcher, I've been a member since 2004. My table was interested in the larger percentage of older workers that you spoke of and how that impacts the pathway to advancement for younger workers, and what role does the necessity of health insurance have in that longer working time?
Those are two extremely large and super perceptive questions. I don't have time to answer all that, but you're exactly right. There is this question of, as was mentioned, sometimes turnover is a good thing because it opens up new opportunities for folks. So businesses do have to be creative in an environment where people are working later in life to create advancement opportunities or create engagement opportunities that may not mean being promoted in the traditional way. So that's a very perceptive, that there's not a quick answer for. Health insurance is a reason why people retain their jobs, and that's obviously a concern, but there are all sorts of different reasons why people are working later in life. Some of them have to do with voluntary choice, some of them because they have to. So, great question.
Kitty Piercy, this is super quick, but it's really important to me. We in our community talk a lot about trying to retain a diverse workforce. People come here and they leave. So what is it that the city, what do you think the city and the business community could do together to create an environment where people will come and stay and diversify our workforce?
Thank you. That's in reference to the exit files, please.
Is that a particular document? I would love to look at that and see the specifics of what you're talking about here. Real quick, I will say, like I mentioned, Eugene is a magnet community. Lots of people do move here, and not everybody stays, and that's okay, but thinking about how different communities are impacted differently by that, I think is a really critical step. Thinking about how to engage and empower different people who maybe have not historically been is, I think, something we all need to kind of row together on. So what I will say is, because we are a magnet community, a lot of people get the opportunity to come through here, and we have the opportunity then to increase that retention. It's going to be a long time, a long-term strategy and goal to do so. But great question.
Great. Thank you all for this really insightful program. But before we thank today's speakers, I'd like to give you a quick couple announcements. I'd like to thank KRVM 91.9 Radio, Pack Info and Simplified Computing LLC, Dot Dotson Photography, and Network Charter School. And we'd also like to thank KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Monday nights at our new time, 7 p.m. And thanks to Community Television of Lane County, Cable Channel 29 for televising recent City Club programs. Next week, we will have a program on short-term rentals, Airbnbs, vacation rentals by owners, and home to go. All these are becoming popular ways for folks to stay on vacations and short business trips or to having temporary relocation when moving to a new community. We will discuss those options in the next program, short-term rentals. Are they good or bad for Eugene? Please join us next Friday, March 6th. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now let's thank our speakers, Henry Fields, Celeste Marshall, Brittany Quick-Warner, Michelle Howard, and Michelle Swift. Thank you all very much.